I truly appreciate that you are taking this opportunity to listen to this presentation on the biology of belief. I think you will find this information not only illuminating and exciting, but also very empowering. For this is a new biology that we're going to discuss, a biology not based on genes controlling life, but on perceptions controlling life, meaning that how you see life is actually how your biology will respond. To lead into this understanding of the science, I think we should really go back to before science. Because before there was the actual field of science, there were people with ideas that gave us information as to how the universe might work. These people were philosophers. Science is based on philosophy. First, a philosopher would offer an idea of the mechanisms of the universe, and then science would try to see if those ideas actually are real in the world that we live in. So science is actually a proof of philosophy. So therefore, to understand the nature of the science that we live with today, it is really incumbent upon us to go back and understand the philosophical roots that have led to today's world of modern science. Science is actually formulated on philosophies that were created during the Golden Age of Greece. There were two fundamental philosophers that gave us opinions and views of how the world actually worked. One of them was a man by the name of Democritus. Democritus is famous for providing us with the concept of atoms. He coined the word atom as something being uncuttable, meaning the smallest particle in the universe. He said that there are all different kinds of atoms with all different kinds of characteristics. And if you want to understand anything about the world we live in, then you have to look at the physical things that we observe and see what kind of atoms they're made out of, because the atoms would give character to all the physical structure. According to this philosophy of atomism, the world is composed of these physical particles called atoms, and there's nothing in between the atoms, that there are physical things and then empty space. So according to the atomist, if you really want to understand the world, just focus on the material existence. In regard to movement, this is what Democritus suggested. He said that actions such as life result from atoms hitting each other in much the same way that a billiard ball will hit another ball and then careen off and yet hit another ball, setting all the balls into action, that the balls being the atoms would start moving. So that, according to Democritus, life is comprised of uncuttable little pieces of structure called atoms, and that movement is a result of atoms colliding with each other. While Democritus was presenting us with a materialistic view of the world, another very prominent philosopher was also giving us ideas. This man was Socrates. Socrates looked at the world, but he saw a duality. He said there are actually two components that comprise the universe. He called one component a vitalistic component, a component based on energy. He said that this vitalistic force represents a form or spirit, that there are shapes and energy before there are actual expressions of matter. According to Socrates, this form of energy is a perfect or ideal form. So he talked about the vitalistic sphere of the universe, the energy form, as being perfect, as compared to the materialistic or physical expression. So, for example, Socrates would suggest that the world of form can have something such as a perfect circle. But then if I give you a pencil and say, okay, I can imagine a perfect circle, but let me see you draw a perfect circle, this is where it falls apart. When the ideas are then created into actual structure, we lose some of that perfect character. So according to Socrates, there are two expressions in the universe: the perfect, ideal, vitalistic form, and then the physical reality, which is an approximation, but never as perfect as the real form. So we have a vitalistic and materialistic component. When the age of Greece passed, and the origin of Christianity started to take over the minds of people in Western civilization, science was also brought into the church. However, in the science of the church, it had to depend on which of the philosophies was going to be followed, that of Democritus or that of Socrates. As you realize, the church ultimately selected Socrates' concept of the world, that there was an invisible vitalistic spiritual component as well as a physical component. The church, like Socrates, also suggested that the physical component, the one that we live in, the physical world that we experience, is just a crude shadow of really what is the perfect or ideal world. And in fact, this is the teaching of the church, is to not actually be caught up in this crude world that we live in, but to look forward to getting into the more perfect world of spirit and energy. And this is the foundational belief that the church brought in from the philosophy of Greece. However, while the church was really preoccupied with spiritual issues, it became the teacher of the Western civilization, and that the church ran all the schools. And so in the schools, they taught a science. The science that the church taught was actually a composition of information from the Greek philosophers mixed with spiritual teachings. So, in fact, it was based on the work of Albertus Magnus and Thomas Aquinas to provide us with a mixing of Christian spiritual understandings with Greek philosophical understandings, as well as the Greek science provided by Aristotle. So Christian science was actually a mixture of Socrates, Aristotle, and spiritual traditions. When Albertus Magnus and Thomas Aquinas penned this new science, it was called natural theology. The mission statement of scientists that were teaching natural theology was to gain an understanding of the natural order so that we could live in harmony with it. This is actually a pretty wonderful mission statement. I wish we were using this mission statement today, because it really suggested that if you understand the natural order of the universe and understand the physical part of the universe, that we would actually be able to live in harmony with that universe. The scientists that were practicing natural theology were primarily catalogers. They went through the world and identified things, giving names to animals and plants and all different kinds of species. However, much of the science was not really open to investigation. And the reason for that is the church claimed that it possessed infallible knowledge, meaning that whatever it said existed that way because it was really directly from God. This information was not questionable. So scientists were actually restricted in their efforts, because if they started to find information that was really not supported by the church, that would go against the infallible character that the church was claiming. So scientists were actually more or less just repeating the dogma that was provided in this natural theology. In fact, much of the universe was actually off limits to scientists, because the church considered some areas of life in the universe as mysteries of God and not really amenable for people to look at or for people to understand how they work. For example, the operation of the human body was referred to as a mystery of God. As a result of that classification, people were really not allowed to look inside the human body to see what was in there or how it worked. It was off limits. In fact, it was a sin for a Christian to look inside the human body. Interestingly, because of that, there were no Christian medical doctors. At the time, the only doctors were Muslims and Jews, because they were not restricted in their efforts of looking inside at the anatomy and function of the human body. However, as scientists started to expand and start to look at the world, of course they started to infringe upon the infallible beliefs of the church with different pieces of knowledge. Whenever a scientist did show up with something that differed from the church, these scientists were referred to as heretics, and that they actually had to be tried at a court called the Inquisition. The Inquisition would actually be a kangaroo court, because nobody could beat the Inquisition court, meaning this: if you claimed you had knowledge different from the church, and the church claimed it had infallible knowledge, those two would not jive together. So the only way the church can maintain infallible knowledge is to eliminate any dissenting opinion. And this was the role of the Inquisition, that when people would come up with differing ideas on how the universe worked, the Inquisition would force them to recant or punish them. Even burning them at the stake was an option for people who would not recant their heretical beliefs.